here in Los Angeles. And this is Michaela Nayland, Chair of the Registrar Stakeholder Group. Thanks.
Volker Greimann, Key Systems, GNSO Councillor, and your Vice Chair on the GNSO Council.
John Berryhill, Nominating Committee, Uniregistrar, DBA Uniregistry, Cayman Islands.
Matt Serlin, Mark Monitor.
Ben Anderson, Askier.
Gordon Dyke Demas. Graham Bunton, Two Cows.
Frederic Guillemot, Safe Runs.
Mike Murphy, Com Laude.
Bob Wygand, Web.com.
Merda Sadeghi, Register.ca.
Mike Zepke, ICANN Staff.
Kelly Peterson, Domain, excuse me, DNC Holdings.
Joyce Lynn, 007 Names.
James Bladel, GoDaddy, and North American GNSO Council.
Sarah Baki, GoDaddy.
Kristen Miller, Cronon AG.
Michael Schuchert, Cronon Berlin.
Christian Ehrman, Larsen Data.
Rieke Pörbe, One.com.
Thomas Frederiksen, One.com.
Robert Turlington, Domain.com.
Darcy Southwell, Domain.com and DirectEye.
Margot Hoffman, InternetLX.
Neil McPherson, 101.
Rob Villeneuve, Momentous.
Rob Hall, Momentous.
Holly Hope, Host Europe Group and Treasurer.
Thank you. Is there anybody else in the room who's a registrar?
Louise Lentino from Instra Corporation.
Chris Crook, Domain People.
Okay, thank you, everybody. The schedule for today, we have some printed copies, which you should have. If you're not in the room, the schedule was circulated via email. It's a pretty busy schedule as ever, so we'll try to keep things as timely as possible. At this juncture, we have two administrative matters we want to deal with. One is in relation to the topics we're going to be discussing with the board, which we normally would finalise in advance. However, we left it until this morning to completely finalise them. And then we have one other matter in relation to yesterday's registry and registrar session. So, Jennifer, I'll hand over to you for the board topic.
So we just want to confirm the board topics for the discussion today between the registrars and the ICANN board. The first one was translation and transliteration. Sorry.
Yes.
Hold on. The IANA transition, our repeated request for the LEA stats as it relates to verification and suspension. ICANN budget and the IG involvement. Does anyone else have any other items or questions about the list, proposed list?
Go ahead, James.
Hey, so I'm going to start on us a little early today. I think that we need to, these are good topics. I think we need to tighten up specifically what it is that we want the board to do on each of these topics. For example, if we say transliteration, transcription, and translation, we don't like it. And then the board is going to, what, look up from their laptops? I don't think so. We have to be specific. What do we want them to do? They're not going to get involved in a PDP that's underway. So what's the ask? And I think we have to kind of subject each topic to that. What is it that we want either to report to the board, or what are we asking them to do in reaction to our report? And I'm just not clear on those.
This is Jennifer with Web.com. I think that we've reserved the working lunch session to clarify what our asks are, and I think that's probably the appropriate time to do it. I agree that that's needed. We are under a deadline to get the actual just topics for discussion over to them this morning. So if we could stick to that for now and just have a placeholder for our working lunch to determine the questions, the actual asks.
And just bear in mind as well, based on past experience with the interaction with the board, that if we have more than three topics, possibly four, we won't get through them all.
All right, yeah, let's just pick the top three then.
I agree we should probably whittle the... I'm sorry, this is James speaking again for the transcript and for the remote participants. I agree that we should whittle the list down to our top three just because of the interest of time. And I think that we should bear in mind that previous interactions with the board from this group have been appeared or perceived or portrayed as just sort of complaint sessions because we haven't been tightly focused on our asks. So I'm glad to hear that we're setting aside some time to focus on those. One of the things I think we should throw overboard or at least abbreviate is the LEA stats. I think it's very clear that we're not going to get those. So rather than attempt to embarrass them repeatedly at every ICANN meeting, I think we've done a pretty good job of driving that home. We just bring it up again. A reminder, we still have not received the LEA stats that you were promised in London. So just tell us you're not getting them for us. Just tell us we're not going to get them, and we'll stop asking for them. Just go on the record and say that governments ask for requirements but don't ask for anything or don't provide anything in return.
Rob, go ahead.
Sorry, James, I have a bit of a different take on it. I think there is an ask there, which is stop asking us for more requirements like this until they do provide them. So
exactly.
Because they're still coming at us for more verification requirements and that type of thing. So I don't want to just say, tell us we're never going to get them and let's move on. I want to say, stop hounding us for other crap like it until we get them.
That's a good point. Let's take cross-field verification off the table until you can demonstrate that we're doing some good here.
Right.
So do we agree that that is one of the top three on the list?
I think we'd agree two things. One is one of the top three, and two, since James stuck his neck out, we'll let him tee up the topic.
Okay. Happy to. Thanks.
No, but jokes aside, we can continue this discussion during the working lunch, but we need to maintain a kind of a tight focus that we have one person who can lead each topic and just make sure that it doesn't kind of go off, as James said, into a kind of an unfocused whinge fest, because that's not particularly helpful.
I just want to be cognizant of time because we do have our guest speakers that have arrived. Could we quickly determine the other two remaining? Possibly a show of hands? And our remote participants could... No, we actually have to get the topics over to them by 9:30.
We can send across all the topics and then just dump a couple if we need to. That's not a problem. We've done it in the past.
I mean, okay.
Quite happily. And it's not an issue. James, go ahead.
I was just going to say, unless we have something really unique and novel and pertinent to say about IANA transition, I think that's underway in so many different circles. I don't really see that as registrar board topic. I think that can be thrown overboard.
I also feel the same way about the ICANN budget. I think that's trains left the station on that one for at least 2015.
Well, Ollie had some, is Ollie here? Ollie had some interesting observations on that. So I would actually say if we can keep, if it's got to go, it's got to go. But
okay, can we agree then we're dumping IANA transition?
Sorry, hang on. All I would say is my observations were, well, so my observations were, James and I looked at this at the last ICANN meeting and we were sort of pretty shocked at, my God, they think there's going to be 33 million registrations in the new GTLDs next year. What came out in the finance session was actually the way that they were calculating the money was actually because of the registry fee that was being included. It was 33 million registrations in new GTLD registries that have more than 50,000 transactions in a year. I'm hoping everyone's following what I'm talking about. They've now reduced that to 15 million transactions. I can't really tell you the basis behind that being reduced. But I guess my kind of thoughts on do we want to bring that up with the board is they did do a finance session they've put all this information out there. I'm not sure what we're actually going to bring up with them. I mean, yeah, we don't think there's going to be 15 million transactions. But I guess going back to what you said, James, about having a specific ask, which I think is great, I'm not sure what our specific ask would be in that session. So I'm happy that we have it, but I wouldn't push that we need the budget one in there. There might be others that are more important.
Okay, guys, I think we can focus a bit more during the working lunch. I'm conscious of the time as we are running slightly behind. We had one other person who wanted to speak on a slightly different topic. Frederic, you wanted to give us some feedback on yesterday's registrar session.
Yes, I just wanted to know, it was really nice to organize that. It was good to have some people speaking to us. Well, some people we knew everything about their TLD, but it was useful for a few. I just wanted to know if everyone was interested in carrying on for next meetings to have other registries meetings.
Go ahead, Rob.
Since you brought it up, we have carried on at this meeting, actually. So there's another session on Wednesday. We've gotten bumped half an hour. So it's in the CA Showroom B, which is if you go into where the exhibits are and take a hard left and go through the curtains, the black hanging curtains behind the ICANN booth, that's where CA Showroom B is. So it's a smaller venue. It is where the DNA meeting, registry registrar technical meeting will be right before us. That's why we've gotten bumped, because when the GAC got thrown out of here. So there's 20 more presentations coming there. Jen and I worked together on this, and we've also asked ICANN for the next meeting to get it on their radar of can we have a whole day Monday with a room to do this, because even Wednesday I'm still way oversubscribed. I have registries wanting slots that we couldn't get them. But what I'd love to hear from some of you, and I know this isn't necessarily we don't have time in this open forum, but today, if you can approach me, what do you want that's different in the presentations? Because I think seeing a video for how great a city is isn't really what we need to hear. It's, what are your price points? What are your marketing plans? How are you working with registrars? That type of thing. But because I've still got a chance to go to the Wednesday ones and say, here's what we'd like you to focus on that's different. But I think, I think we're already moving towards the path of let's do this again and again and again, if that answers your question. So.
If we do it again and again, it's good for me. But maybe we could have some mandatory topics that they should talk about, like the dates, the timelines, and as you said, rather than explaining how beautiful the TLD is and how beautiful the team is. And I like purple, but I'm more interested in timelines.
Perfect. Thank you. I'll make sure they try and do that for Wednesday. So,
anybody else want to speak on this topic?
Sorry, to be clear, it's 1:30 now, not 1 o'clock. 1:30 to 5:30 on Wednesday is the new time.
Okay, thank you. I believe is Maggie here?
No.
Hi, Maggie.
Okay, so now we're going to hand over to Maggie Surratt from ICANN Compliance. So, Maggie, if you want to join us up here, space is there.
So while the presentation is being put up, I want to say good morning, everyone. My name is Maggie Surratt, Contractual Compliance. With me in the audience today, I have the team from Los Angeles. So they get to see and experience and put the names and the faces of the different registrars we work with. But also to my left is a new team member for compliance. That's how I'd like to think of it, right? Is Alan Grogan, whom many of you know. So with that, what we're going to do is our normal brief update to you based on different questions that came our way. And then we will have time to address the different questions that we receive. Sure. Team, can you stand up, please? All right, many of you have received emails from them, so you should know. I'm going to start with the front row, Jennifer. then if you can raise your hands as I'm saying your name, please. Leticia, Beverly, Connie, Jan Agronenik, Senor Oppenheimer, Greg, Jonathan, Young, did I leave? And Paul Redman. Sheesh. I'm sorry. Who did I miss? Oh, sorry, Shauna. Somebody, Jan was in front of you. And Shauna. And of course, you all know Owen. Owen? So who's driving the slides? You are? So it's Paul, not Vanna, right?
Good morning, everyone.
Next slide, please.
So this is actually quite the sensitive mic here. So we're going to update you here on things since ICANN 50. That's the agenda, and we'll go over those topics in order. Next slide, please. The first thing we want to talk about is Compliance launched this past year a Who is an Accuracy Quality Review, or QR. You may have noticed some notices from Compliance about that. And what that's doing is to verify continued compliance with a contract. It's for domains that were suspended during a Who is an Accuracy complaint. And that's to verify either that it is either still suspended or if the data has been changed to see that there were reasons for the data being changed or you know, if the data was confirmed. this is the stats for Who is an Accuracy complaints from January through June of this year. And as you can see, about 90% of them were either suspended or deleted, and then some were transferred out, and others were either verified. But in all instances, registrars demonstrated compliance. There were no issues of domains you know, being turned back on without proper support for that. Next slide, please. Another effort that was just recently launched is a remediation QR quality review. And this is a process for when a registrar or a contracted party, it can be for registries as well, is demonstrate to ensure that they have continued compliance after they've implemented a remediation effort to either resolve a formal or an informal compliance matter. And this will be a request for information just to verify that whatever issue was fixed or addressed is still in operation as it should be. And it's possible that if non-compliance is found, that there can be an escalated compliance notice sent for that. For some further guidelines and clarification, you can refer to the slides later in the presentation or online, which describes the ICANN compliance process. Hot topic we continue to have are the abuse reports. Most common ones that we're seeing are online pharmaceuticals, malware, viruses, and spam. There does continue to be reports that are outside of that. Some examples that we have are registrars that are on the 2009 RAA. Other ones that we would not send to a registrar is where the reporter did not contact the registrar first. We want to see that the reporter's doing that and not using ICANN to enforce their complaints. Also, compliance, as well as other parties in ICANN, have continued to conduct outreach efforts with registrars, abuse reporters, and IP rights protection groups regarding the requirements for abuse handling under the 2013 RAA. One new thing also this past since the last ICANN meeting was calling domain registration scams. I know people here have seen these before. They're emails that are sent to registrants asking them to register domains, pay certification valuation fees, or to protect a trademark somewhere either through registration or a UDRP. They often will charge high prices. You often cannot see who the underlying registrar is. It's not readily available. Some of them are actually very highly customized, we've been seeing. And you know, there's usually a way to provide payment and personal information through that. ICANN did a blog to warn the community, but also compliance is following up with inquiries to the resellers and then also following up with some of the registrars for those types of complaints, either to inquire whether they are a reseller, and in some cases where they are abusive, compliance is outside of our complaint processing system, sending those to the registrars as an abuse complaint itself. And I do appreciate the feedback and support from some of the registrars in this room who have worked with us on this and helped us to take down some sites that were targeting registrants, and we were able to get those taken down, and we appreciate the collaboration on that. Now I'm going to let Jennifer present.
Do you want questions at the end about this, or as we go, at the end?
Good morning, everyone. I'm Jennifer Scott, Manager of Contractual Compliance. Here are some lessons learned regarding the 2013 Registrar Accreditation Agreement that we've seen since London. The first is regarding who is accuracy program specification and the difference between verification and validation requirements. Unfortunately, some registrars are still mixing these up. To verify is to confirm or correct the accuracy of the who is data and requires the affirmative response back from the registered name holder. On the other hand, to validate is to ensure that the WHOIS data's format is consistent with standards, and examples of those standards are listed in the specification itself. Registrars are continually providing us, ICANN, with verification and calling it validation. So we are trying to get the message out that validation is consistent with those standards. The abuse report requirements are also something we've seen registrars continuing to align with on the 2013 Registrar Accreditation Agreement. There's Section 3.18 contains these requirements and covers both abuse reports from law enforcement and from non-law enforcement. The main thing to note here is that a court order is not required to investigate abuse reports. And registrars must have a procedure for dealing with abuse reports and must publish that procedure on their website along with their abuse report contact email address. They also must have the email address and telephone number for abuse reports in their WHOIS data. Domain renewal requirements under the expired registration recovery policy, or ERRP, must align with the renewal notices that should be sent approximately 1 month and 1 week prior to the expiration of domain names, and within 5 days after expiration if the domain has not been renewed. This is required whether or not the registration is set to auto-renew. So even in the event of an auto-renew registration, these reminders still should be sent to the registered name holder's email address. The reminders can be sent to other email addresses besides the registered name holder email address, but it must, at a minimum, be sent to the registered name holder email address. UDRP issues that we've seen are registrars failing to verify that they are the sponsoring registrar of the domain at issue in the UDRP to the UDRP provider. And sometimes, you know, this is meant to prevent the registration from going to another registrant or registrar during the UDRP. So we do ask that registrars get in touch and respond to these verification requests from the UDRP providers. And I'll hand it back to Owen. Thank you.
So now I'm going to move on to a continuous improvement update. One thing that compliance did this past since London was to remove the email confirmation that was done for who is an accuracy complaints. Part of the thing was to speed up the processing, but we also encountered that because some of the domain names are spam or fish similar to that, that those emails are getting blocked in spam filtering systems, and so either the reporters were not receiving it or they weren't coming back. So that has been done, but all of these complaints are still being manually reviewed by staff before sent to registrars. Additionally, the web forms were updated to remind reporters that they need to request anonymity if they would like to. Otherwise, their information will be forwarded to contracted parties. There are some complaints, such as transfer or renewal or the UDRP complaints, where that is not allowed because you know, registrars will need that information in order to address that complaint. Additionally, the staff compliance staff turnaround time, which was previously just reported at the ICANN meetings, has been now included in the monthly dashboard. The link is there. That's done every month, and so you'll be able to see what the turnaround time is for compliance staff for the various notice phases. Excuse me. Just briefly, compliance staff has been engaged in participating in the policy and working group efforts within ICANN. Generally, that's providing data and trends to guide policy changes and you know, provide some ongoing implementation strategies based upon the experience the compliance has seen from the complaints and whatnot. And you can see here you know, the different working groups that the staff here has participated in. Next slide. A couple of things that I'm sure everybody in the room are aware of, some upcoming changes that we're having. There'll be an IRTP change effective the 31st of January regarding the client transfer prohibited EPP status. That will be something that can only be imposed when the registrant consents and it's included in the registration agreement. Additionally, it must be removed within 5 days of a registrant's initial request, and similar to retrieval of an auth code, the mechanisms cannot be more restrictive than changing the contact or name server information. Another policy change that will be coming in February is the additional WHOIS information policy, also known as AWIP. And this, registrars must only use the EPP status codes that are defined in the policy. Certain ones, such as active, will not be permitted under that. There must also be a link to each EPP status code in the WHOIS to an ICANN webpage explaining what that code means. Next slide, please.
So before we open the floor to the questions, I would like to give Alan an opportunity.
So some of you know me, but a lot of you I've not met. I'm Alan Grogan, and I've just been appointed as the Chief Contract Compliance Officer at ICANN. I'll also have a new position reporting into me, Consumer Safeguards Director. There are pretty dramatic changes underway, obviously, at ICANN with the end of IANA in sight and with new GTLDs going on board, and those new GTLDs that include public interest commitments and new safeguards that haven't applied before. A lot of those safeguards are really directed at protection of consumers generally, right? Anti-malware and spam and viruses and other protections. So one of the things I want to think about kind of at a strategic and analytical level is how we should approach compliance, whether there are issues that we could be handling better, whether there are issues we should be emphasizing more or less than we are right now. And I'd be curious to hear from all of you in terms of your experiences with that in the coming weeks as I try to sort through this. One of the other things that I want to do is I think contract enforcement is one thing, but sometimes contract enforcement is not fully adequate to address consumer safeguards. So I would like to think about ways consistent with our limited remit and the bottom-up community stakeholder model that we might be able to go beyond pure contractual enforcement to help safeguard consumers. And some ideas that I have that I'd like to discuss with you and other constituents is whether, for example, we might promote best practices, you know, that are not contractually binding, but that would help to identify and marginalize the small percentage of registrars that are out there that are bad players in the community, and then I think give everybody else a black eye. And that if we don't self-police, if we're not successful in proving that the multi-stakeholder model can self-police the industry, I think we increase the risk that somebody else steps in to try to do that. And I don't think that's in the interest of the registrars or the rest of the community or the ICANN multi-stakeholder model. So I'll turn it back over to Maggie.
So, Michele, you want to facilitate the questions for us, please?
You mean the...
The Q&A.
No, I was just thinking about the, you know, we do this three times a year where you come in, we beat you up. It's, you know, it was not Q&A.
Actually, you don't beat us up. It's tough love, right?
Okay.
You know, Fadi always is awesome as our leader, as a motivational leader. When he launches the staff, we invite him, especially before coming to an ICANN meeting. Compliance has a tradition. Okay, Fadi, come give us the right words. So our words for compliance this whole week, and you see them in front of me, calm, confident, optimistic. So, start.
Okay, so we can destroy that slowly. In the queue, we have Volker and then James and Christian and Rob.
Hello, everyone. Volker speaking. Three small points that I would like to raise. First of all, in the past months, we have seen more focus coming from ICANN compliance on what we see as actual bad actors with enforcement action having been taken. That's something that's appreciated. With one registrar that we had severe problems with, or at least a customer of ours had problems with being suspended, and another registrar similar being de-accredited. So that's something we really appreciated. We also noticed that the quality of complaints that we at least received has improved. It's not perfect yet. We still get complaints where we think that compliance, having looked at the complaint, could have dismissed it out of hand. But the number of these complaints has decreased dramatically, and we also appreciate that. And the third and final point, the EPP was the ERRP was on the list. Personally, I think it's bad policy because it creates confusion and anger with the customers that do not want to be spammed by emails that we have to send out. But you have to enforce it because of policy, and I understand that, and I just wanted to say that this is something that we struggle with sometimes.
So if I may start, again, optimistic and positive, I want to thank you for noticing the quality improvement. But I also want to encourage each and every one of you. I cannot emphasize enough. If you do not tell us, we do our best. I am really honored to work with an amazing staff. I know the staff in Istanbul is listening, and the staff in Singapore might. But we care. We are passionate about what we do, and we want to do it with quality. Please let us know about quality issues, and please let us know about bad actors, because we do, and we have announced it at all the forums, including the ALAC forum where we received opposition. We do want to make sure that the reporters are professional and also respectful of the industry we are in. So we do suspend them, we do treat them, they get notices like we all do, and inquiries. Regarding the ERRP, I cannot comment on that one, Volker.
Okay, thank you. Next, I have James.
Hi, thanks, Michele. And hello to Maggie and Owen and your team and Alan. You know, let's start everything off on a positive. I think that you guys are becoming much better to work with, and I think more responsive and more professional, certainly leaps and bounds of where we were a couple years ago, and I think that the process continues to improve, and there's some increased predictability in that we didn't have previously. I have a long laundry list of things, you know, rather than kind of just shoot from the hip at these three times a year meetings, I've actually kept a note percolating, and then I say, oh, you know, this is something that next time I see compliance, I'm going to put that on my note for them. So I'm going to try and prioritize here. The first one, I think, that is clear, and you touched on it a little bit in Owen's presentation, is about setting expectations with regard to abuse complaints. There are a lot of, people outside of this room, outside of registrars and outside of compliance, are reading what they want to read out of the abuse requirements in the 2013 REA. They believe that finally, and I see John nodding his head, finally they have the third-party beneficiary rights they've always assumed to have all this time, which is they can force a registrar to take a particular action against a particular site, and if we don't comply or don't agree with their assessment, that ICANN now will hold us, hold our feet to the fire. And I think we need to make sure that it's understood that our obligations are to, as you noted, report contacts, disclose procedures, respond to law enforcement, and all of those things, but not to guarantee them any sort of outcome that if you jump through hoop X, Y, and Z, we will take down a site for you. And I think that that's not clear. That I think we need to maybe level set those expectations in the community. We had a report recently where someone said, you know, this site is doing very bad things. We looked at it. We couldn't tell. We were not the host. We can't confirm. So we're not going to take down a site. We can't do that. Now, later it turned out they used a stolen credit card for another product. So we nuked them for that. but we can't take down a site just based on an accusation. So that's the first kind of major item is making sure that you're taking to the community this discussion that our abuse obligations are there, they are real, you are enforcing them, but they are limited to what's in the agreement and not what people wish was in the agreement.
If I may respond to that, James, thank you for your first comment about level setting expectation. We all know the 2013 RAA has brought on a lot of new provisions, opportunities, whichever way you want to best describe it, or obligations as it relates to this audience. And change has to be introduced and has to be learned. So when we receive complaints of abuse, as Owen presented earlier, we always make sure that you have been given that courtesy and we try to go that route. But in compliance, my whole team, if I ask them now, they can tell you, the verb we have in compliance is ask. We don't like the other verb, assume. So we always, when we come to you asking for certain questions to help us understand, this is only because we want to be able to do our homework and make fact-based decisions. We're not law enforcement agents, but we do educate, as Owen spoke to on the slide, we have done outreach activities across all areas, individually and by different groups. So we do take that, James. And if you see, again, we're missing an option or an opportunity for improvement, let me know, and we will work on that.
Let me just comment for a second, too. I mean, so I agree with you conceptually. I think there are a lot of people out in the community that have unrealistic expectations in terms of what the 2013 RAA actually provides and what registrars are obligated to do. I do think we need to do a better job of educating people. I was at a dinner last night where there were people who did not understand that we're not a law enforcement agency and we're not a regulatory agency, and so I think we have work to do in that area.
Yeah, thanks, Maggie. Thanks, Alan. And, I just want to emphasize we're all trying to do the right thing. But the 2013 REA does not offer a guarantee that reports will translate into getting a registrar to take action, particularly if it's a content-related issue and we're not the content provider. One other quick one here, and then I'll drop back and see if there's any time left over. We're having a number of operational issues with Iron Mountain regarding our data escrow deposits that are, instead of becoming more of a technical and operational conversation between us and Iron Mountain are going to compliance first and then coming back to us? How do we short-circuit that so that it's just our tech people and Iron Mountain's tech people? Let me just set the stage. And maybe this is something that you guys haven't, none of the other folks in the room have encountered yet, but may will encounter at some point, is our data escrow deposits are getting so large that they are taking the entire night to upload because of the bandwidth, the connection that Iron Mountain is giving us. And they are failing our deposits because they start and end too far apart. And for their systems, that counts as a failed, we missed the deposit for that day. And instead of them calling us or instead of telling us, you know, hey, there's something wrong, can you retransmit or whatever, I'm getting a compliance notice. So how do we get that operational stuff out of the picture of compliance so it's off your desk and it's off my desk and it's just the technical people who are smarter than us can actually get it fixed?
Okay. I have Paul Redman. What we've done within our team, we've consolidated what we call common areas for registrars and registries, and data escrow is one of the areas in that responsibility. If I may suggest, James, I would like to partner with you and Mike Zupke and Paul to understand what are the issues and where are these disconnects, and we will regroup with Iron Mountain to see where are the missing links here and why are we getting those first and address them. Would that be okay?
Absolutely. I think that it's an extra step. Obviously, we don't want to put our accreditation at risk because
yes,
we've got a slow transmit.
So our first action item, Paul Redman. He's going to regret.
I see a hand
yes.
way back so in this Paul back will of take, the circus tent.
Right. Paul will take the initiative of initiating a meeting request with the names I just listed, and then we will bring on Mary from Iron Mountain. But let's understand what is the issue, and then we bring them on.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you, James. And just a reminder for the speakers, would you please say your name? That goes for ICANN staff as well as for registrars.
Michaeli, Mr. Chair, if you don't mind, I'll drop out. Could you just put me at the end of the queue?
Yeah, no problem.
And then if there's time, I have a couple other questions, but I don't want to hog the
clock here. Thanks, James. I'm not used to you addressing me as Mr. Chair, but it's
well,
nice.
You did wear a tie, so...
And 2 days in a row, too, I know. Christian, you're up.
Christian Müller, Kronon. I just wanted to shed a light of some other really super important compliance and issues here. And to illustrate what I'm talking about, I wanted to show you what we got as a WHOIS accuracy complaint. We wrote in our WHOIS domain status okay, more info, and then the URL, and we got the complaint that it should read, for more information on WHOIS status codes, please visit, and then the URL. I think that's a really super important thing here. I personally think that most Germans would understand our more info even better than the original sentence, but if that's a compliant issue, we are willing to do that. Another complaint we had here is that we switched the lines last updated and then another URL to the status code. So we did it in the wrong way. I heard here today that we have so many pressing issues with abuse and this kind of stuff. On the other hand, we are getting accuracy complaints like this, that a sentence is not really completely literally quoted as in the contract. I have at least the suggestion that in the stats you have on your first frame that you don't count in these kind of complaints, if that's possible, so that we get the right impression. You know, I don't know whether you understand me right, but this is ridiculous from my point of view, where we have abuse issues out there and we get this kind of stuff. Sorry.
Thanks, Christian. Maybe Owen or Maggie might like to respond, or Alan?
It was not really a question, I know.
That's okay. Put them on the spot. It's okay.
This is Owen Smigelski for the record. I would hope that was actually sent to you as a WHOIS format and not a WHOIS inaccuracy complaint, because that would not actually be an inaccuracy. And what we try to do is...
You are right.
when we receive these types of complaints, and sometimes they are generated internally, the 2013 RAA is very strict in terms of what the output must look like, and so we do enforce that, and compliance does receive complaints about that, then we do need to then forward on to make sure that the WHOIS output is in the correct format as required by the contract. But we try to, as much as we can, if it is not an inaccuracy, such as there are complaints we receive that information is incorrect because a country code is missing, instead of sending that to the registrar as a WHOIS inaccuracy complaint, which then requires validation, verification, there's a 15-day timeline, we will do that as a WHOIS format, which does not require contacting the registrant, which is something that the registrar can resolve internally, generally. So we try to do that to reduce the workload and the burden.
Thanks, Owen. Next in the queue, I have Rob, but just so you're aware of the queue, I'll give you who's in there now. I have Rob, Elliot, John Berryhill, and Jennifer, and James is in last position. Constantly, I had to keep pushing the other people in front of you.
Well, no, wait. I wanted to be at the end when I said that. I didn't mean permanently at the end. I wasn't asking for the last word.
I see how the Mr. Chairman has been dropped, and now you're just arguing with me.
Michaela, Jeff is also in the queue.
Okay, Jeff as well. So
behind James.
Behind James. Rob, please.
Thank you. I have just a couple of quick comments, and I'll jump around to them. You said the number one abuse reporting complaint was pharma. This room tunes out when we hear that. And we all think, yeah, okay, whatever. It would be very helpful to me to actually hear what are the actual abuse complaints from a common registrant, not an organized professional lobby association that's very good at putting them in. So I don't know if you can screen out, the top, anyone putting thousands of abuse complaints in doesn't really help me fix my systems or educate my registrants more, because we're not going to solve that problem, frankly, and we all know the three or four well-organized groups that do it. I would rather hear from you, and I know it plays great for other crowds, but what we'd like to hear, I think, or what I'd like to hear is what are the actual abuse complaints from the common registrants or from our more typical registrants that we might actually have a chance at solving to try and decrease them in the future, as opposed to reporting on, the what I'll call the professional activities or the organized lobbyists saying, using your systems to, bang away at one specific thing. Because I will guarantee you, my registrants are not, their number one complaint to you is not, oh my God, there's illegal drugs in the internet. So for me, it would be very helpful to hear more of what, take the professional activity you're seeing, and only you can see it, and know what numbers are those, and report on more of the common man registrant, what is happening there. The second thing that disturbed me a little bit about your presentation was you talked about verification and validation, and I agree on that distinction, and I agree it's important, but I don't think we're actually required to validate data yet. There's a working group going on about that. So it concerns me a little bit that you're saying people aren't understanding the difference, and when you ask them to validate, they're verifying. Well, there's no requirement to validate yet that I know of. So, if they're providing you the verification data, that would probably be a proper answer at this point, because they're not required to validate. Alan, I appreciate your wanting to go larger, and I think best practices and that type of thing are very appropriate. I think we're maybe perhaps just a little premature. I think with this new 2013 RAA, we're still teething and working through a lot of the problems. Some other people have highlighted some of them of a misunderstanding of what the RAA is. So I think you'd find support in this group, but I think there's still a little bit more work to be done on just getting us to a state of stasis, if you will, on the 2013. And so I know from my perspective, I'd rather see the effort put there right now. It's come a long way, as a lot of people have said, but let's keep going on that front before we start lobbying more things at us in the terms of, what else can we do? Let's solve the issues we have. And I have one more question that I'd like a response to later, not necessarily now. The registry group is you're getting some pushback from them, I note, on the difference between a compliance complaint and an audit. And I'd like to understand what you believe the difference is between those two, because clearly in my mind, when there's a complaint from someone that we have to deal with, that's a compliance issue. If you're deciding to do a review or a study or something along the lines of we just want to go out and we've had no complaint, we just want to go out and study this, to me that's more of an audit of our systems, and they're covered very differently under our contract. So I'd like to understand clearly, because I think that's the next possible disagreement between our two groups.
Okay, thanks.
So I address a couple of the issues for the abuse complaints. This is Owen Smigelski. We reported those were listed in order of volume, so that you saw the online pharmaceuticals and the other ones were listed in there, but we can certainly look to provide some more metrics on that moving forward. Regarding the verification and validation, the cross-field validation is the one thing that's not required. However, I think it's 1A through E or through D is enforced now, and so there must be validation from a format for email address, postal address, as well as telephone number. That is effective now.
And I'd like to address the clarification on the what we call preventive or inquiries versus audit. When ever since I've been here, because there was not really an official audit program in place, we put the strategy and the methodology for the audit, shared it with the contracted parties and all the stakeholders to collect input and feedback on it. So the difference in very simple answer, an audit, we announce it, and we have we tell them which provisions are going to be, we do outreaches about. An inquiry is more of what we call a preventive approach to help gain confidence and alleviate some of the perceptions that are out there on specific complaint type. For example, the PICs have been a big hot topic at the GAC, and one of the big projects that compliance was tasked with for fiscal year 15 is to proactively review and look at PICs. And I'm using that. No, it's not relevant for this audience. But that's because you cannot wait till there is a harm to find out that we're not ready to take care of it because there has to be some remediation plan. So it's based on what is the sensitivity of the topic and the review underway.
Sorry, I think you've defined a mass audit that you're going to do against everyone on a specific topic. That doesn't mean that you coming in and investigating my registrar to see if I'm compliant with my PICs is not an audit as well. And so, and contractually, they're dealt with very differently than I'm dealing with a compliance complaint versus an audit of am I compliant. So I'm not talking about the mass audits you do necessarily, but I want you to understand that if you're going to come in and say, I'm going to audit you as to whether you're compliant with your PICs or whatever the other requirements are, we don't have PICs, of course, but to us, that's an audit and needs to be treated as such, not just another compliance inquiry. Because it's a much more serious penalty to us, if you will, failing an audit versus dealing with a compliance inquiry.
Okay, thanks, Rob. I'm closing the queue now so that I have Elliot, John, Jennifer, James, and Jeff. And the queue's closed, but this session finishes at 15:15. Thanks. Over to you, Elliot.
Thank you, Michele. Elliot Noss from Two Cows. Hello, Maggie. Alan, welcome. I want to go back to comments I was making in the All Things Who Is panel yesterday, and I want to get a little bit more particular with this group. You know, we're in a more narrowly focused session. We are finding, and in my discussions with other registrars, this is consistent across registrars, that the significant majority, you know, perhaps nearly all, of the who is inaccuracy work that our organizations are required to engage in is wasted, is based on mass fallacious complaints. I want to focus very narrowly on one element of this system, and I want to note at the beginning and the end why we need to remove all of the wasted work together. Compliance, ICANN compliance, and registrars. Registrars, because it simply wastes resources and keeps us from stopping real harm. Compliance, because you guys are the ones who get the pointy end of the complaint spear. And so, you know, this is an issue that I've been talking about for years, and I really want you to hear me coming from. I want to help you guys with this. So, very specifically, you know, there has been a decision made that we will not be provided with the name of the inaccuracy complainant. I've been trying for a while. I'm going to try again in this room. Whose decision is that? In other words, and I don't want a department, I want a name. I mean, Maggie, is that your decision?
So, no.
So whose decision is that?
I do not know. When I came on board, there were an effort that was implemented to allow reporters to submit anonymous complaints. And that decision was there, and it's continued.
You've heard us. That's fine. You've heard us, me in particular, complaining about this for years. We were complaining from the time that that process was taken down to the time that process was reinstated. If it's not your decision, if what I hear you say today is I'm simply following my mandate or my edict, then let me turn to Alan. Alan, do you have any idea whose decision that is?
So having been in this position for about 36 hours right now, no is the answer, but I can look into it. So
I'd like to be really, really precise on this. What I would like from you, and I don't, you know, the answer can be a day, a week, a month. When will you get back to me or to registrars and let us know whose decision that is? In other words, who owns that decision? Who should we be complaining to? Because, you know, I've bounced from Maggie to Fadi on this issue and everywhere in between, and I don't know where to put my issue.
So I think the answer is it probably resides with me now. So let's talk afterwards. And
great.
I'd like to understand more of what the concern is. I have an idea what it is, but let's talk.
Yes, and I'd go further to say, you know, we have been collecting data, both anecdotal, in other words, here is a single horrible string, and macro. Here's how many complaints we're dealing with that look like this. And, you know, I'm going to try and solicit input from other registrars. And I want you to understand the value that I'm going for here. It's transparency. You know, what we have right now is a perverse system where the individuals and organizations who are trying to violate other people's privacy are having their privacy protected.
So I heard the action item here, but what I'd like to ask, are there problems? Are those complaints not valid complaints? If that is the case, Elliot, please let us know.
So you've got one
in your inbox,
John,
right?
John, yeah, okay, thank you. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Maggie, we've been bringing these complaints that whether they're valid or invalid. If somebody submits 1,000 or 100 complaints, not based on any particular harm, but simply because of an inaccuracy in a fax number, in the form of a phone number. What that is wasted work. It's as if the police were sent to investigate every jaywalker and every small bylaw matter. And what happens is the murderers, rapists, and thieves have a much easier time of it. And I don't think that you or I want to be in the business of stopping jaywalkers.
Okay, guys, I think this could go on at length, but I'm conscious of the time, and I've got a couple of other people in the queue. So if you can follow on afterwards. John, Jennifer, James, then Jeff. John, go ahead, please.
Elliot stole a good bit of my thunder because this protecting the anonymity of people who are using the Whois data problem reporting system to stalk, to abuse registrants. When the person elects to be anonymous, do I understand correctly that they provide their identity to you and you are going to shield them from the repercussions? Because I have one in your inbox, as you know. Legitimate registrant, he has had problems with registrars. That registrant has had problems with registrars for years. Every time he complains to compliance, it falls on deaf ears. He can't get auth codes. He can't transfer domain names. But because he has a stalker, every Whois data problem report gets sent to him. It costs him money. He has to pay me. It hurts him. You are protecting and harboring people who are abusing domain registrants, and I want to know why. I want to get these people. I want to sue these people. I want to take things away from these people, but you won't give me the information, and I don't understand why.
Okay, thank you, John. Maggie, do you want to come back on this?
I hear the frustration, John and Elliot and everyone who clapped. I just can't remember everybody's name. I just want to make sure it's clear. Compliance is not protecting anyone. For some reason, again, I know Elliot. I see that. I understand body languages, and I see it across the room.
But all Maggie, in fact, you are.
Elliot, may I please finish? Thank you. I know it's a passion, it's a heated topic. All I'm asking you, John, Elliot, and everyone, what I can do today, there is a provision in the contract that speaks to his inaccuracy and other complaint types. All I ask, based on what is within our scope, if there is an abuse, share it, and we will take care of that and address it. And if we fail you, then please come tell me.
Maggie, could you pull up slide 13, please? Could you describe to me how the added a note to most submission forms reminding reporters to request anonymity is not protecting them?
It is aligned with what has always been with the who is inaccuracy.
I understand. That's the form answer. You made a substance comment, which is we are not protecting them.
Right.
There it is in your presentation to us about how you are protecting them.
And Elliot, that message has been in all the monthly updates by request of many stakeholders and community members. They want to remain anonymous. When we do that, they understand that they need to follow the process.
Can you show us that data?
What data?
You just said you said two things.
Go
you
in
said
the monthly report.
This has been in the monthly reports
that
community members, and I guess you know both the Bruins and Legit Script are community members, want to keep their anonymity. That's fine. Let's have that discussion. So right now they not only have their anonymity, they have you making sure that anonymity is protected. Let's have that discussion openly in the community, not through newsletters. That's not the way things work. And you know, my greatest frustration here is I've been on this point now for 3 or 4 years, playing whack-a-mole inside the organization.
So I've been here 3.5 years. To your point, it's been there before arrival. And I'm not disclaiming it. I'm the head of compliance now, and I will work with you. Wednesday is an open forum for compliance, and you're going to have everybody from the community. Hopefully they'll stand up and talk about it.
What time, Maggie?
It's the... right here. Yes, that's why we created the Wednesday outreach, to bring everybody from the community to come in and have a dialogue. Michaeli's been there, and many members.
I agree with you. I think it's a valid topic that we should open for discussion. I mean, I will look into it.
Okay, guys. I have to move down on this queue, so I have Jennifer, James, and Jeff, and I'm sorry to do this to you, but please keep it brief, because we're running tight on time here.
Absolutely. This is Jennifer Jennifer Stanford, for the record. I have two complaints. Actually, I had three, but we drilled down at it with Elliot's. My first one is, and this is something that we've brought to Maggie and Owen's attention, and I'll be happy to expand on that further tomorrow and Thursday, is around the documentation of escalation procedures, and this goes along the same lines of transparency. So when a complaint is escalated from a first to a second to a third notice, given all of the various different scenarios and how that takes place, we need to receive documentation, work with you in order to create the documentation if need be, and get that published out to the community. There's more and more registrars coming on board on a daily basis. Registrars work in conjunction with compliance, and the way that we respond to our complaints at this point in time have only been through email. It's a mechanism that's not always reliable. We've provided examples of when we've sent back responses. For one reason, we didn't receive it as a registrar from ICANN, given our mail servers or whatever might be going on the side of the registrar. Same on the side of ICANN IT. It's not the most reliable way to communicate with one another. I understand the registrars or the registries have the ability to use Salesforce, you know, a tool that we're going to work with Christopher Gift in order to roll that out to the registrars. I know you all are as excited about that as we are. We want to be able to see our tickets, where they are in the queue, make sure the information's been uploaded. That needs to happen. It's a little disconcerting that it's rolled out completely for the registries, as far as I know. given the fact that the registrars receive, I don't have the stats, but probably, you know, 2 to 3 times the amount of complaints than the registries. So that's a little discouraging, and I'd like to kind of understand where the registrars missed the boat on that. Was it our fault? Was it theirs? Who was prioritized one over the other? But we can address that later. And along with the documentation of the escalation procedures, I want to make sure that we hone in on something that has always been raised around SLA response times. Response times are getting better, they're more efficient, but there has to be a mutual commitment. The registrars are required to respond by certain time frames based on the RIA. We need to see the same response times out of compliance, and we need to make sure that those response times are documented. Now, we are on the hook for making sure we respond in X period of time. And we sit on the other side with bated breath, you know, trying to avoid a breach or trying to avoid a third notice. Some of our tickets are closed without notice. Some of them get escalated without notice. So it's constantly, we're constantly in the state of moving target. I'm not saying it doesn't keep me up at night, but sometimes it does. And I want to avoid that as much as possible. And I think there are other registrars in the room feel the same way.
So to be mindful of the time, regarding the first and third comment Jennifer made on the documentation and SLAs, we are working on publishing. We have the process published, but we're going to add the words to the documentation. We've also provided it in the presentation. And SLAs, we do hold ourselves accountable to SLAs, and we have internal daily stand-up meetings to discuss those. And we are working on publishing them, which you saw already we started to do so. But we will also make sure we follow up. We are following up, but we've seen some places where we are not. So you have our commitment to do so. Regarding the second item for the technology and Salesforce, I know we are all anxious to get on that enterprise bus, like we call it, but there is a timeline, and we're all in queue for that.
So the only thing, Alan, I'd like to ask for you is to make sure that we get a timeline around the Salesforce and the timeline's committed to. Us as registrars, we have projects every day. We have deadlines. We have to hit those deadlines, or there's a negative impact, whether somebody is fired for it or there's an impact to the budget. We want to make sure that the appropriate parties are accountable and held to those deadlines, number one. Number two, around the documentation of the escalation procedures, We'd like to work in conjunction. We don't want a documentation being put forth and published and said, here it is. This is what you've asked for. We want to just make sure that we've circulated and that every registrar has the information in there that they believe is necessary along with timelines. So if we could work together to finalize that, that would be appreciated.
Okay, guys, we're really, really tight on time here. I have James and then Jeff.
Hi. So actually, I think we might be, Jeff and I might be touching on a related subject here. This is James speaking for the transcript. No? Not? We're not? All right. I'd like to talk to you a little bit about the WHOIS specification. And now, if for those of you who aren't familiar, the 2013 RAA says, you know, you'll do all these things, and you will abide by this WHOIS specification. Okay? And so we've got this WHOIS specification. But there are things that... let's say, are in the WHOIS specification that almost have implications for the broader agreement, but it's not clear that if the WHOIS specification changes, is that effectively an amendment to the RAA? If that format changes? Let me give you an example. Jeff and I, we were talking about an issue about a month ago or something where the WHOIS specification has a field that says reseller. Reseller. And if you are using a reseller, that's where you can put the name of that reseller. And then Rob, I think very correctly, pointed out, well, I don't want to put reseller blank if it's not a reseller. I don't want to teach my customers that they should be looking for a reseller in WHOIS. So I want to leave it out. We were told by compliance you can't leave it out, even if the data is empty. And I think that the interesting thing about this whole discussion is if you go to the RAA itself, nowhere does it say you have to collect the name of the reseller. So just the fact that it has a placeholder in the specification that is binding somehow means implied or suggested that we should have been collecting that all along. So that's just one thought. The other one that's really driving us nuts on our team, and they've asked me to come back on this until we get some change, is how do we get that abuse point of contact email address moved in Whois? We understand it has to be there, but it's in the wrong place right now, and it's flooding our abuse channel with complaints about the website. I don't like this picture. I don't like your politics. I don't like your religion. They think they're contacting the webmaster for the site, not the registrar. They're not complaining about abuse about the site. They think that they're that's the abuse point of contact for that website. And if you look at it, the reason is because of where it's positioned in Whois, it looks like it's directed at the website. We've got to get that moved. We've got to get it closer to registrar, move it to the bottom of the list, move it to the top. It can't be where it is, because I can tell you, you know, we're all kind of like, yeah, that's got to be an annoying thing. Not when you have three people whose job it is, Monday through Friday, to sift through the crap that comes through that email address. The mountains and mountains of misdirected abuse complaints that really are meant for that website that are landing on our desk, tying up our people, tying up resources. And it's meant to be a resource, but, you know, it's actually acting in reverse right now, and it's confusing the heck out of people.
Just cutting in here, James is absolutely right. And it's not just abuse complaints that we get. There's a billion scripts out there that scan the Whois for email addresses and trying to contact the registrant for purchase inquiries, spam, or anything else. And the abuse address is the first in the Whois now. But they don't change, of course, their scripts because they're lazy, because they're spammers. And that means that we, in the abuse queue, get that spam. And this also means that we cannot do our jobs to investigate proper abuse, because we are inundated with spam and useless emails that cost time.
Yeah, and to Volker's point, you know, before, let's say, we would receive 100 complaints a day, and 90 of them were legitimate abuse complaints that required investigation. And that number can now spike to 10,000 complaints a day. But we're still looking for those 90. That number hasn't gone up. So you see, the problem is that the signal to noise has gotten completely out of whack, and it's all noise now. And I understand the intentions were good behind, let's put this address in Whois. But you need to understand the implications of it. We've ruined that channel now as a legitimate means for reporting abuse.
Thank you, James. Thank you, Volker. The simple question we're asking you is, how can we move that? Now, maybe you don't have the answer here and now, but we need the answer on this.
Yeah, so I don't have an answer on the fly, but I'll look into it.
Jeff, over to you.
Thank you. I guess hopefully this, I get the last word here. And Jeff Eckhouse, I guess, for the record. So, James, the issue you brought up is something I wasn't going to bring about specifically, but one of the things that I think is a theme you've seen here today is there is a direct there's a discrepancy between the interpretation of the 2000 RAA, what we believe it says, or we believe the meaning, and what compliance means. This reseller issue that James brought up, you know, it said, oh, you must, if you sell through a reseller, then that must be shown in the Whois, no matter what. And I was on the RAA negotiating team, and I was there when we negotiated it, and I know that wasn't the intent in what was said, but ICANN compliance is coming out and saying, no, that's what it means. And to me right now, there's no path to escalation. There's no path to discuss this with anybody else. And, you know, if you as a registrar don't like it, we can send you a breach notice. And it's our decision, and too bad. So something, I don't want to go into those specific ones, but something to think about is we need some sort of path to escalation on interpretation issues, because yes, we understand it's a contract, and we negotiated and we're both there, but people are going to take certain lines and certain things different ways, and, you know, we're two parties to it, so we need to think about how both parties come to an agreement, and it's not a unilateral decision on what the interpretation of the RAA is. So something I think we should start moving forward on. I don't know how that mechanism is, how it's done, but I think it's something that needs to be put in place as soon as possible. Thanks.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Maggie. Thank you, the rest of the entire compliance team. and we look forward to hearing from you on the specific issues that we've raised today. Registrars, we now have a break, so if we could probably stop the recording for this section. And the break runs until 10:30.
So thank you, everybody. I really mean it. Your feedback is always welcome. Some we can apply, some we can't. But the most important thing, I want to thank you for your collaboration and the opportunity to be here. Have a great day.
Okay, everybody, the break is until 10:30 local time. Please try to be punctual so we can get restarted again on time. There's coffee towards the back of the room, apparently.